Hello, this is David Gawke, Head of Public Policy at McFarlane's. As you will be aware, there's been a lot of discussion about how financial services regulation might be reformed in the light of Brexit. Big Bang 2.0 is the phrase that we often hear. A few weeks ago, I sat down with Michael Sholem, our new partner specializing in financial services, and Gavin Horan, our head of policy for asset management, to talk about Big Bang 2.0 and what it might involve. We recorded this in advance of what was then expected to be the date of the autumn statement, which was the 31st of October. Subsequent to that, of course, the date moved on to the 17th of November. But the points we discussed, I think, still remain relevant. What are the options for the government in terms of reforming financial services? What are the benefits? What are the risks? I hope this is an interesting conversation. Do enjoy it. Thank you very much.
So let's start off, if I may, with Michael, your perspective in terms of Big Bang 2.0. I suppose we should start with what was Big Bang 1. But where do you see the policy in this area going?
Sure. Well, I guess to start with, what is the Big Bang 1? Well, that was back in 1986, back when I was a young nipper. They decided to get rid of many of the rules that restricted activities on the London Stock Exchange. So they got rid of the rules relating to foreign ownership of members of the exchange. And they also got rid of the distinction between brokers and so-called jobbers, who are essentially market makers in the London Stock Exchange at that time. And that, it's thought, created a boom in financial services in the UK. It saw the arrival of many of the US and Asian and European firms in the London market, and arguably helped make London the financial centre that it is today. And that's why it's very attractive, I imagine, for politicians to say, we're going to have a Big Bang 2.0.
Yes, and I think probably particularly attractive for conservative politicians, because, of course, that's looked at as sort of one of the sort of high points of Thatcherism, Nigel Lawson's reforms. Mm. And the city did go from strength to strength following Big Bang, the original Big Bang. Now, in terms of Big Bang 2.0, I'll bring Gavin in a minute in terms of some of the details that we've looked at in the past. But from your perspective, Michael, what would you be looking for? What would you see as a sort of big opportunity that might be available for financial services in the UK?
I think you can break it down into two different areas. I think there's a general benefit that can be obtained by this, which is that we can have a much nimbler policy making process than we had under the old European system. So for those of you who don't know, the old European system had level one and level two legislation, but the process was cumbersome, not least because you had to get 28 member states to agree, but also just the design of it meant that you would look at having 2 years before you had a principal piece of legislation to deal with environmental disclosures, for example. So going forward, if the provisions of the Financial Services and Markets Bill are put in place, we can expect that regulators will be given more discretion in their policymaking, and actually that we can move to adjust our regulatory regime much more quickly. So that's the first area. And then I think there are specific areas of policy that we've inherited from the European Union, around AIFMD, around MiFID II disclosures, and other particular sort of detailed policy areas where now we have the freedom to say that doesn't really work for the markets that we have in the UK. And another example of that was the banker's bonus cap, which was part of the capital requirements package at European level. And now we're free to get rid of that as being counterproductive and not really achieving the policy aims that it set out to back 10 years ago.
Yes, not necessarily a populist or popular measure. But yes, I was in government at the time that particular provision was imposed upon us, and the UK very strongly resisted. It was one of the rare occasions where the UK was well and truly overruled. So yes, there is the freedom to do that. Gavin, you've spent a lot of time looking at some of these options. Anything that you would particularly highlight sort of above and beyond Michael's points?
Yeah, I mean, I think one of the main benefits that derives from this exercise is looking at regulation in a considered manner. I think it's already the case that you've got effectively divergence happening by default. Some of that's, of course, been driven by the UK's own initiatives, but you've also got within the EU a lot of legislative reviews going on. I mean, Michael alluded to AIMD, for instance. MiFID is moving in different directions in both jurisdictions. And you've got a whole wealth of these pieces of legislation, ESG, of course, as well as a broader package. But they're moving, nominally the same terms, but moving in different directions. So one of the benefits you've got from doing this via the Financial Services and Markets Bill is that you've got an opportunity to look at the regulations in the round and do it in a considered manner, rather than just happening by default, as we're mentioning, incrementally. So I can go into some of those areas in a bit. But I think the other point around this, and it really reflects on Michael's point about the nimbleness of the regulatory, and it is a new regulatory architecture that's being set up in the UK. But also with that falling away of the EU institutions and levels of policy making and regulation, there is also a deficit in checks and balances, in accountability. The UK regulators, PRA and FCA, have obviously accrued a lot of power. I think part of what the government is trying to do is to hold them accountable to specific objectives, including two new secondary objectives in achieving net zero outcomes, net zero emissions outcomes, that is, and the UK's competitiveness, but also setting in place mechanisms which can hold the regulators accountable for doing those things. So you've got some benefits there, which, as I said, I think they're actually quite necessary. Well, it could be benefits, but they're quite necessary outcomes just because you've got this falling apart of the old architecture since the UK left the EU.
So if I can ask you both, in terms of what's the industry reaction to this? Do they see this as a big opportunity, or is there a bit of a concern that we might be going too far and too fast?
Sure. I think it depends a little bit on which part of the industry we're looking at. So the larger clients of ours that have international operations and operate in the EU as well as the UK and around the world are concerned about divergence. I think they know that it's going to happen anyway as the EU goes through its own legislative changes and processes for existing legislation, and the UK will go down its own path. But that does mean that because of the link between the EU and the UK markets, that you'll need to do two sets of disclosure. And I think a good example of that is the SFDR and taxonomy regime in Europe for ESG disclosures. You'll have to fill out one set of templates and disclosures, and then there'll be the sustainable disclosures regime in the UK when we get the details of that later this year. And I think it's very likely that clients will have to adapt to providing both sets of similar but different in key respects disclosure, and that is a cost. I think for some smaller or UK-only clients, I think they'll appreciate the added flexibility that I think we will get from this new regulatory architecture. I think the UK regulators will be freer to take a principles-based approach to regulation, perhaps, and freer to give more guidance, because they were somewhat constrained by their ability to give guidance where previously that had been the preserve of ESMA, the EBA, and EIOPA, the sort of pan-European regulators. Now there's a bit more flexibility inherent in the system.
So Gavin, a mixed picture depending upon where you sit within the industry, how big you are, precisely what you're doing. It's quite a complicated picture, isn't it?
It is, yeah, and it depends on the sectors that you're talking about. I mean, I agree with Michael's point. It tends to be the larger cross-border institutions that want similar rules, but you know, as we've said, divergence is already happening by default, in which case the question then becomes which jurisdiction should lead. And I think the industry, or the larger parts of the industry, more often said that the UK should follow the EU's outcomes, which is sort of understandable when you think in numerical terms. The markets, obviously, the scale of the EU is larger. So it is a complex picture. I think we are moving in different directions. entirely in some areas. PRIIPs is another example of disclosures that have moved in a different direction. And there were some numbers put out, I think, last week by FT Ignites, which suggested the cost of complying with two regimes is about £50 million.
Sorry, do you want to just set out what PRIIPs to the thousands of our casual listeners?
It's the Package Retail Investment and Insurance-Based Products Regulation.
I did know that. I just thought for the listeners it would be good for you to set it up.
Of course, David, I'm going to ask you the details about it in a moment. The difficulty you've got there with PRIIPs is you've got essentially the same regulation, but in two different forms in each jurisdiction, and it's moving in different directions. So there isn't really there's not a jurisdiction leading there. It's quite possible that will be one of the first regulations the UK might cut. But what I think that does is raise an interesting point. Is there an opportunity there for substituted compliance? If you find, for instance, in Switzerland, where you've got two different regimes, but they sort of end up with the same outcome. So can you therefore substitute in that? Now, the way the Memorandum of Understanding on Financial Services has been agreed by the UK and the EU suggests they won't go far enough to kind of agree that point of substituted compliance, which means I think that you are going to have these difficulties of, in some areas, perhaps EU rules proceeding, in other areas, perhaps the UK, or you have completely different regimes. But it is a case, I think, that we will end up with something like substitution in some areas, regardless. Look at the ESG regulation that Michael mentioned. The UK are designing, they're trying to map them to the EU. So although it's a different piece of legislation, they say, if you've got a fund strategy that's in the UK labelled as, you know, whatever the label might be in the UK, that will map to a certain equivalent label in the EU. So we're sort of edging towards those areas of substitution, but I don't think it's being done in any explicit manner just because that lack of an agreement between the UK and the EU.
And I think, Gavin, it's fair to say the more that we hear rhetoric about Singapore on Thames and about, you know, the liberating, the ability of the UK to be liberated from the shackles of EU regulation, that does have an effect on audiences in Brussels, in Paris and Frankfurt, that they will apply more scrutiny perhaps to some of the UK measures than perhaps they otherwise would have if we're going to go along the lines of saying that our systems are looser and being proud of that fact.
Yeah, I agree with that. And I think if you look at some of the reaction in the EU from in response to the Financial Services and Markets Bill, you know, there were a few EU politicians who were deep in the weeds on financial services saying, you know, this is a statement of, you know, it's a declaration of war, but it's a statement of intent to compete with the EU on financial services grounds. So it is being interpreted that way. I think we should probably say, for the benefit of our listenership, things are moving quite fast politically in the UK at the moment, as David might want to elaborate on. So whether the new government, when it's formed, will take a view in favour of Singapore upon Thames, or there might be perhaps a more cautious approach that aims towards economic stability, not moving and changing things too quickly, will remain to be seen. But I do think, you know, that bill has set a marker that the UK is not necessarily going to take or play second fiddle on any of these matters.
Well, yeah, as Gavin touches upon and perhaps revealing more about the workings of these recordings than one would normally do, the person who is Prime Minister when we make this recording is probably not going to be the person who is Prime Minister when you listen to this. So, yes, we do live in sort of fairly fluid times here. I want to come back to a point that Gavin raised earlier, which is about the architecture. And we've got a Financial Services and Markets Bill, which is going through the Commons. And there is this debate that is going on about the regulators and where's the level of accountability. And of course, when these matters were drawn up at a European level, you did have the European Parliament that would go through this very, very heavily. And I remember from my time in the Treasury and indeed before that, very often MEPs, British MEPs, would be very heavily involved in shaping the legislation and would work very closely with the Treasury. So people like Kay Swinburne or Vicky, before that Vicky Ford, before that Theresa Villars, You're really quite heavily involved in playing a role here. But you did have this degree of accountability. And the question is, what happens now? What's the role of regulators? What's the role of ministers? And what's the role of Parliament? Now, we could spend many hours discussing that. I don't want to go into sort of enormous detail. But in particular, there is this issue of sort of call-in powers that isn't in the face of the bill as it currently stands. But in the Summers leadership election, both candidates said that they were going to take those powers. Whether the next leadership election involves the same thing, it's too early to say. But I don't know, we'll start with Michael. I mean, what's your thoughts in terms of how that debate might develop?
I think it's a very interesting debate. And I think it's the counterpart to the point I made earlier that the European process was much slower. It was much slower for a reason. That reason was there was much more accountability. You had very knowledgeable MEPs on the Econ committee, not just from the UK, though often they were UK MEPs, really drilling down into the laws, clause by clause, and also really getting under the bonnet and looking at what ESMA and the other European regulators were doing. In contrast, the regime that's proposed under the Financial Services and Markets Bill will have far less parliamentary scrutiny of what might have been called level one, you know, framework legislation under the old European system. I think there are some moves to try and ensure that there is accountability. Parliamentary oversight of the regulators will be put on a statutory footing. I think that's probably a good development, although in practice, I think the David, correct me if I'm wrong, but the Treasury Select Committee was always able to call in the FCA or the bank if they needed to at various points.
Yes, they were, and indeed they did. But of course, I served on the Treasury Select Committee for a few months in 2006 and 2007 and gave evidence to it on occasions as a minister subsequently. It's got a big remit, and it's doing an awful lot. And the big moments for the Treasury Select Committee when it attracts a lot of the nation's media interest is generally after a budget or an autumn statement or a spring statement or whatever it might be, where they've got the Chancellor there. And those were the moments that you really look forward to and where you'd be focused on. It wouldn't necessarily be, you know, having the Governor of the Bank of England in front of you.
That's right. And I think also, you make a good point. It's implied in what you're saying that they will not have the capacity to look deeply into the policy objectives and efficiency of having certain kinds of regulatory disclosures for retail customers, for example, which is the kind of thing the Econ Committee would have done. And there would have been hours of debate about it in some cases, for instance, when the PRIIPs regulation was being designed.
So and I then, should say, by the way, actually, they would look forward to the moments with the Governor of the Bank of England, but possibly not talking about financial services regulation.
No, yeah. Exactly. And then on the call-in powers, it's always going to be controversial, the idea that you have more direct government intervention powers in financial regulation. Is it going to be like the National Security and Investment Act that has a similar call-in power in respect of M&A transactions where there's a potential national security angle, and those are relatively rare instances of call-in? Or given the fact that regulation has quite a direct effect on retail consumers, will the temptation be for the government to call in regulatory powers and actions far more frequently because they want to be seen to do something when there's been a financial scandal or where consumers have lost out or where there's been a banking trading scandal, for example? And I think we really don't know that. And one might say the government is asking us to trust them, that they won't exercise that power in a way that would politicize the regulators. But it'd be interesting to see how they bound that power within the act, within the bill when it's finally when we finally get to see the drafting.
Indeed. And of course, a call-in power just the existence of the call-in power can have an influence on how regulators behave.
Very much so.
And you know, different governments in different directions. I mean, I guess, Gavin, at the moment, one might sense that the call-in power could be used to put pressure on the regulators to diverge and show the benefits of Brexit. But you could imagine in future governments, it might be more, as Michael says, a sort of pressure to protect consumers and so on, which is certainly my time when I was on the Treasury Select Committee. That was very much the mood. Gavin, how do you see this playing out?
Yeah, I think that's right, David. I mean, to some extent, things are going full circle. If we think back to the earlier days of the FSA, and there was a focus within their objectives and in terms of the pressure that was put upon them, at least informally, to focus more on the competitiveness of the UK, the industry, its productive outcomes, and so on. So there is a bit of a return to that. What I think is possibly changed now, and Michael's alluded to it really, is that this is a formalization of things that were perhaps happening informally previously. But even if we look at those kind of accountability mechanisms that are being set up, leaving aside the call-in power, you notice it's all quite one way. There is a lot more bearing for Parliament and government to put influence upon the regulator, but not necessarily the capacity or the institutional capability there to check on what they're doing. And we've already seen, just as a practical matter, there are questions about the FCA's resourcing. Does it have the capacity to do all the things it's being asked to do? I think the effect of some of these reforms and just the things in the financial services markets bill as it stands to re-regulate, to look at regulation again, leaving aside the call-in, means that you're likely to have much more politicized regulation, explicitly or otherwise, but with a bit of an accountability deficit there in terms of how the rules will actually work. So what I think will happen is you'll start to see, perhaps in a populist fashion, where it sort of suits parliamentarians to weigh in and make a lot of noise on an issue, that could well happen. And it could be things around consumer protection. It could be very Brexity things, for instance. But in terms of what the outcomes might be, you know, the quality of the regulation, how it's actually being implemented and working, I think from the parliamentary perspective, we probably won't see as much scrutiny as might have been the case previously.
So we've talked about the architecture. To finish off, can I ask you both, what does the future hold then?
Well, I think the future has some interesting opportunities for Britain. But I also think it's important to remember that from a regulatory perspective, it won't entirely be buccaneering Britain out by itself on the ocean, making its own path. And that's because, despite leaving the European Union, Britain is still a member of international regulatory organisations like the Basel Committee on Banking Standards, and IOSCO. And to date, Britain has always been very committed to implementing those standards and has been an important voice in coming up with those standards. So the government and regulators won't quite have a completely free hand in everything they want to do, even if there will be more flexibility in the future.
Gavin, thoughts on that?
Yeah, and I think to add to that, the policymakers, both government and FCA, for instance, have been quite explicit that their strategy looking forward is to try and export the UK's approach to financial services regulation. So while those organisations are constrained, I think you're going to see UK policymaking in this area with one eye on the international field as well. In other words, trying to design rules which are perhaps not just strictly applicable to UK firms or even firms operating in the UK, but also looking more broadly at global banks across the rest of the world and other types of financial institutions. So I suppose there is an element of global Britain there, but perhaps in a different way than we might have expected.
Well, thank you both, Michael and Gavin, for that. Clearly a complex area. One where there are some opportunities, but various trade-offs, as always, in policy in this area. We did think perhaps the 31st of October was going to be a big moment for Big Bang 2.0. We're probably looking at a longer time frame than that, but we will certainly be following this debate very, very closely. Thank you for listening to our Policy in Practice podcast. Join us the next time we cover a topic. I think we'll be returning to this subject before very much longer. Thank you very much.